Hello, my friends, and welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Kelly Wells. I do the NXT tracker at The Torch, which is where I take a talent and look at their prospects for the future. But this time of year, I am more interested in doing the previews of those who have been called up for NXT. I did a part one of that, and I think I'm going to do a part two just because they had a bunch more call-ups that I didn't realize were going to be happening. Anyway, we're going to go through this week's somewhat character-loaded episode of NXT, and we're going to tackle a couple of interesting email questions that we got this week. So this week with me, I have, first of all, Justin James.
Hi, I'm Justin James, Torch's NXT TV correspondent. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin_M_James.
And I also have Tom Staup.
Yes, indeed, at Tom Staup on Twitter, and I cover the NXT tapings at Full Sail and the MLW tapings at the Gilt Nightclub.
All right, and I am on Twitter, at Spooky Milk. My name is Kelly Wells, and that's where you can find me. If you want to email us with anything, comments, questions, better yet, things you might want us to tackle on the show, then you can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. If you email us during the NXT episode, we typically will see it and get to it during the show. So I know some people have asked us, actually several people have asked me that question. And yes, we typically can get on the show if it's in time. So first of all, we are going to start with something I did not think we'd be talking about this week, which was Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. This is the feud that wouldn't end. Like Justin was saying right before we went on the air, these two guys just went 37 minutes. So how are you going to top that? Like, what's the end game here? I think that's a really great question. Obviously, with those two being on the same roster, it makes sense, I suppose, that that the Ciampa character is going to keep doing this. But what's the end game? Justin, since you brought this up before we were on, go ahead and start with this.
You know, we already had a loser leaves town match. The loser left town and then refused to leave. We had another one where a loser leaves town for good and the loser didn't lose this time. I don't know where this goes. It's going to be like, I don't know, a steel cage with a chainsaw on a pole match. I just don't know where we go from here. It's frustrating me because I thought the feud was really well done. I thought they had a great blow off to it. What happened tonight would have fit in perfectly to the build-up to the match at TakeOver New Orleans. It would fit in perfectly, you know, 2 months ago, but it didn't. And now I feel like why are they bringing this back now? And I agree, like you said, like these two are just going to be like the Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, where if they're on the same roster, they're going to feud. And for the sake of feeling like some closure, I feel like one of these guys has to go to a different roster. Just get out of NXT so that we can focus on having a show.
Yeah, this was odd to me that, I mean, I guess it wasn't surprising insofar as even last week we were talking about how are they going to, this Black Gargano match doesn't make any sense from a booking standpoint. And of course, now, as soon as Ciampa came out behind him, I was like, oh, okay, well, this does make sense. Hopefully we'll at least get a match and we did. But yeah, this was surprising. And it's not like there's a takeover right around the corner here. So I don't know when they blow this off or what they do. Maybe they really wanted to give us one on the NXT weekly show. But we've got 4 months until the next takeover. I don't think they're dropping in one in June like they've done in the past once or twice. But I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, there's this vision in my head of one of those empty arena matches being the blow off to this.
That actually could be fun.
Yeah, and NXT did have one empty arena match before, Cesaro versus Regal.
Oh, that was before my time, but I really want to see that.
Yeah, that just says it all. Cesaro Regal. Yeah. Or at least I'm convinced it was an empty arena match.
Okay.
But you know, if they did like an empty arena, no disqualifications match,
right,
that's the only way I could see this and give them the entire episode.
Yeah. Falls count just anywhere. All of it.
Yeah, just give us exactly. Yeah. Just throw it all in, chainsaw on a pole, and just let them destroy each other for an hour, right. And then say, that's it. Like, they both stay in church at the hospital in comas.
All right. Tom, talk us down. What should they do that's not that?
What should they do? I'm glad I'm not the only one who was surprised by this, because I feel like I should have seen it coming, and I did not. What should they do? I feel like they should keep Johnny off TV for a while, which doesn't even mean a call-up. I think there's too much going on the main roster right now. He would just get lost. So what they should do is let Ciampa just be himself for a while and exist on the NXT roster independent of his feud with Johnny, and see what happens with that. Now, the main reason I'm okay with this having continued is actually the involvement of Candice LeRae. I know there have been a lot of questions from her biggest fans as to how she's slotted in right now. I feel like there's been a good balance of presenting her as a strong competitor in her own right, but her romantic association with Johnny makes dramatic scenes like this that much more emotional. She was the centerpiece of this whole sequence with Ciampa and Gargano and Cassius Ohno a little bit for me, with her concern for her husband. So that's what's keeping it fresh for me. And if we want to talk about what happened afterwards, I can launch into that too.
Yeah, it was. Are you talking about like on the way out to the ambulance, or
actually about the sanity stuff? Which is actually, that's what I thought had to have been a dark main event. And okay. I'm glad I didn't talk about what it was, since it didn't turn out to be dark. But it was so bizarre.
Yeah, it was odd, because Sanity haven't really been presented as heels, but they definitely worked heel here. When people are working outside of their established TV characters, normally it does mean dark. I guess they wanted them to put over one more person on the way up, and why not Black? I think it's funny to see Young in this spot. NXT title match for Eric Young. Here are some stats I found on him. His last singles match on NXT was in September, 7 months ago, against Adam Cole in a losing effort. His last win was in January 2017 against Chris Atkins. That was his last win, and it was also his second win ever on the brand. His first was against No Way Jose on November 30th, 2016. So there you go. Two wins, four losses, and 2 years, and that got him a title match. Everything screamed dark main event. But what?
And what was funny about it, and I was questioning myself, I was like, has Eric Young ever had an NXT title match? Is this really how he gets his first NXT title match? Yeah,
his first match on TV was a non-title match against Samoa Joe in that super surprising, like, out-of-nowhere entrance that he had. That was his first match, but they called that non-title. And he lost that.
You're saying his first title match or his first TV match ever?
That was his first TV match on NXT.
No.
Yes?
No, he fought James Storm, didn't he?
No. I don't think so.
Works every time.
What, Colt 45?
Well, now you got me wondering, but I'm almost positive his debut was against Samoa Joe.
Because he had like this one-off match and then came back months later.
Yeah, the one-off match was with Joe.
Oh, that was, for some reason, yep. I thought it was against James Storm.
No, that was, I'm sure they crossed paths in TNA plenty, but yes, no, sir. His one-off was with Joe, and then I want to say he was gone for 6 to 8 months before he showed up again.
Gotcha.
Well, I think this is definitive proof, especially since they televised it, that Alistair is indeed a fighting champion, and he'll just throw down with anyone. Right. And I got a kick out of, like, if there was anything to enjoy about this, and you could tell that they weren't really filming the part of the arena where the exit is, because people were getting up and leaving. But I got a kick out of how Young was launching into the soliloquy of, like, Johnny Gargano was our hope, but he was brought down by chaos. And Alistair was just like, dude, shut up. If you want a title match, I'll give it to you. If it just shuts your mouth.
That was pretty funny.
That was that had me laughing, because I was just like, thank you.
So you know, it was the token send off for the male members of Sanity, bizarre as it was. My live observation from this was just that Black did the sort of like live event babyface thing afterwards, of while everybody who stayed to watch the match was filing out, he was greeting everybody who wanted to meet him. So that's cool.
And he black masked the entire heel faction at once, which is also super dark matchy.
Yep, absolutely. They didn't get the better of him. He just smoked them all. So, but yeah, it felt for a minute, I thought, wow, this show's going to end at like 43 minutes. That's about the shortest they've ever gone. But sure enough,
A moment, and I felt that shot in the back was done so well. And my favorite part of it was Alistair walking past. Again, just another example of the NXT backstage areas and the PC seeming like living, breathing areas. But there's just that moment where you don't know that something else is coming, where Alistair, who doesn't have, he's not expressionless like Roman Reigns is expressionless, but he doesn't show too much emotion on his face. And there's that moment when he walks by and I'm like, wait a second, did he put Tommaso up to this because Johnny is the only one who's ever collected a pinfall on him?
No, he was furious. He was furious. Even my kid looked at it, who, by the way, wore an Aleister Black shirt just for this event. My kid looked at it and he said that Aleister Black's going to go in that ring and demand a fight against a title match against Tommaso Ciampa right now.
Yeah, Ciampa was – I was thinking maybe he would actually move on to the title picture with because you got to do something with Ciampa. And I was going to say this actually right after you did, and I kind of got sidetracked, but Ciampa right now needs to be somewhat separate from the Gargano feud, because as hot a heel as he is, if he keeps on being grounded in just this one feud, mm-hmm. it's going to be really hard to transition to something else and have it be even believable, because we get to say, well, why now? Why'd he finally move on? I think we got to get him even just like a placeholder feud, just a 2 or 3 week feud with somebody like Cassius, and just somebody that he's going to buzz through and we know he's going to beat.
It's just game dangerously fight forever.
Right. And, and they've been great together, and they will continue to be great together, but there needs to be an end game for this, or it's going to be a little problematic. Was there anything else on the match itself? I mean, just kind of a quickie crowd pleaser, mm-hmm. I suppose.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
Is there anything else on that?
Probably one of Eric Young's better NXT matches that I've seen. The thing that I always say about him is that he seems to like to slow down the pace. He works a lot of rest holds, and I don't think I felt that as much this time. So it was fine.
Yep. I want to say the match with Joe, his debut match, was probably the best one. I'd have to go back and watch it, but yeah, I think so.
Eric Young is going to be one of those people that I'm going to classify as, I never understood the hype or excitement for him.
I think the fact that he's as small as he is and made it as big as he did really is a draw for a lot of people. I wanted it to be a bigger deal than it was, too. I like what he's done. He's fine. He's a good hand.
I'll never classify him as more than a good hand.
Yeah, we'll see what happens on the main roster, but I don't know. Sanity, I worry about them on the main roster. Hopefully they have something to do for them. Maybe this was a sign that they're going to work heel. I don't know what they're going to do. Obviously, Nikki is not, I don't think. I think they'd be crazy to have her be heel, and she's going to anchor them for a while anyway. But there you go. Let's move on to Oney Lorcan versus Adam Cole, the first North American title match on TV. I would just say to all of those people in the arena just cheering for Undisputed, if you really want this thing to work, just boo the heels. I don't know. I just really wish they would. But yeah, this was, we opened with our big scene of all four guys talking and played our weekly, like, who's the tag team champions, because they just kind of seem to be whichever two they want it to be. I thought Cole was going to pull double duty, but this is what we're doing. And then we moved on to Cole versus Oney, which I thought was pretty decent. And I like the fact that the heels said he was going to do it by himself, and then they just blatantly went against that when they realized they needed him. So pretty decent stuff here. And maybe there's something more for Lorcan and Birch finally at long last. Tom, what do you think?
Well, you're talking directly to me with the crowd reaction, you know, whether you intended to or not. And I'm, you know, I'm not trying to make a statement, but I'm not the kind of person that's going to react to somebody just because I know that's the way I'm supposed to. And I find Undisputed Era so entertaining right now. And this really was the most fun I had at the taping, this promo segment and the match. And they do just enough to remind you that they are on the heel side of things regarding the outcome of matches. But even things like Kyle O'Reilly throwing up the X had me in stitches. And you've even got the rib tape on Cole. So he's kind of the underdog in the match, which I guess he probably would have been rib tape or not, just because of how his character works, and how the outcome of the match turned out. But I find these guys so entertaining, and I'm not saying that that's not an issue because they are supposed to be heels. This is a subject that I struggle with so many wrestlers right now, because I'm one of the many people that really enjoys heels, and almost everybody now is a cool heel. Like, you know, you had Big Cass come out on SmackDown, and I genuinely just don't like that guy right now. I'm like, damn it, it's working. Because I so often tend to cheer for the heels. But yeah, I'm really high on Undisputed Era right now. And I thought the promo, it just came off really well from all four guys. And I especially liked Roddy's bit, because, of course, he was progressing the storyline. And this was, you know, we were questioning whether or not the explanation was going to be any good, whether or not it mattered, whether it was any good was up for debate. But he gave possibly the best explanation, and I don't know if any of us thought of that, but not only does it make sense from Roddy's perspective that he would doubt Pete Dunne's loyalty to having a partner, but it also plays on Pete Dunne's history, not just by himself, but in a match that was with the Undisputed Era last summer or fall, where he left Tyler Bate to be decimated by Undisputed Era after they had just come into NXT. But he returned to the ring just to grab his UK title. And
yeah, right. That was hilarious.
Yeah, oh, it was beautiful. And so this calling back to that, kind of like Strong joining Undisputed Era in the first place, called back to some other things. It's just some really well thought out storytelling at work. So I am in favor of the entire segment, even though I do recognize that there are some fundamental issues with the traditions of babyface and heel splits.
Yeah, it's tough to do, and I think NWO kind of started us down a track that is going to be difficult to come back from ever, because they were the, you know, definitive cool heels at the time, and it was very hard to get them booed, harder and harder and harder to get them booed every week. And I don't know if the workers wanted to be booed necessarily, or if they just wanted to prove something to themselves. I don't know. I don't know what it was like. I know WCW was just kind of a disaster behind the scenes with the inmates running the asylum and everything like that. But yeah, that's what happened when the workers got too much power in some cases. But yeah, I thought this came off well. I really think that Lorcan and Birch could be an interesting thing going forward. I hope there's some spot for them to do something, to make something of this. I'm really looking forward to Pete Dunne's response, because this is going to be a real test for him, because he's essentially working babyface here, but you don't want to move him too far over that we lose what made him so cool in the first place. So now, right. So now you got the Undisputed Era having the exact same problem that Pete Dunne had on the other side of Pete Dunne. So maybe working against Pete Dunne will help, because people do want to cheer him because he's just so cool and, you know, terrifying in his own way. Justin, on this whole Undisputed Era segment.
I really liked Roddy's explanation here. It was so, it started with the usual, you know, I'm doing this for myself, I'm putting myself first for the first, you know, the usual reason, right? But then it actually made sense. You know, Pete Dunne's not trustworthy. And on top of that, he saw Undisputed Era, you know, stand up for each other. In terms of Undisputed Era being healed, I had this epiphany, right, while they were coming out, and Kyle O'Reilly is doing his air guitar thing, and Bobby Fish is making these faces. These guys are incredibly huge. They're super dorky.
Right.
That's their heel gimmick. They're dorks. Like, who would want to hang out with these guys? They've got a guy playing air guitar, which in and of itself is dorky.
Right.
But he's playing air guitar with a championship belt. He looks stupid. That's heelish, right? Bobby Fish makes these faces, and he's got his stupid hipster mustache with his stupid hipster beard. And you're surprised he doesn't have his stupid hipster man bun and carry around a portable record player with himself to hook headphones up to, while, you know, carrying around a portable French press to the park to play Frisbee. Because that's hipster too.
That was really specific.
Very specific. And, like, people, like, that Bobby Fish character with that beard and that mustache, it aggravates me just to see his beard and his mustache. He reminds me of this guy I used to know, who I hated. And I fired once. And then my boss told him that we rehire him. And then I had to fire him again. That felt so good. Like, I got to fire the guy twice.
Wow. This got really personal for you, apparently.
Yeah, and Bobby Fish should be proud of this, that his mustache alone has evoked such emotion towards me. And this match, Adam Cole won me over with the way he sold the ribs. If I didn't know anything about WWE booking, and even knowing a little bit about WWE booking, I said, Oney Lorcan has a chance.
Right. Yeah,
it's because Adam Cole really did a good job. So kudos to Cole. You don't hear me say that. Kudos to Cole. Kudos to Fish and O'Reilly for being subtly heelish, even if the fans want to cheer them. It's up to the fans to see that, you know, Bobby Fish is this despicable hipster, and Kyle O'Reilly is this incredible Dungeons & Dragons playing dork that they shouldn't identify with and that they should be ashamed of. And Adam Cole's a horrible, horrible man who kept his title because Oney Lorcan, who I think has had one win in NXT, was going to beat him.
Right. It was. I definitely liked the selling. Thought this was a good match. I thought it was an odd dynamic, of course, to have the face attacking the heels taped ribs. I mean, that is definitely a...
If you're Oney Lorcan and you've got one ring, if you've got like one win in 2 years and you're Oney Lorcan, you'll take every edge you can get.
Oh, I get it from a character standpoint. A character standpoint, I get it 100%. It's just, you know, it's a trade-off of what we usually see. So, yeah, it was a good match, good segment, and God, it'll be interesting to see Undisputed Era, and certainly the way that Undisputed Era is responded to once they get to the main roster, because that's going to be a big question for them,
yeah.
How they're responded to on the main roster.
And I, I kind of feel like we're headed towards a Burch and Lorcan versus Fish and Strong match, by the way.
Yeah, and I think that will be at least part of this, and maybe that'll just be as much as that gets to be. Burch and Lorcan, I can't see him being treated as threats to the title, but because of the production of Undisputed Era, they're gonna make us believe. So that'll be interesting to see. So lots of possibilities coming out of this, which is what you want when you've still got 4 months until the next TakeOver special. Let's talk about the women's division, because for a show without a women's match, which isn't super common in NXT, we certainly got a lot of forward progress as far as the way they're going to present that division. Shayna Baszler, of course, it's her court, and they do all the stuff that they want to do on the main roster with guys, and this is my yard and how it's supposed to work, has never worked as well as far as one person terrifying that and just dominating that division as they are right now. I would hesitate. I'm not even sure this is lesser than the Asuka thing. Now, obviously, Asuka's was just shown through a lot of respect wins and everything like this. But as far as like somebody who you feel is almost unstoppable, they've done a really, really good job with Shayna. So we got what I thought was lovely was shots of every other female in the division, every single one of them doing these mini promos talking about how they could be the one to beat Shayna and everything. And then, of course, we got my girl, Dakota Kai, with her cringing, terrified interview that I really hope is not just for an enhancement match and is leading to something real big down the line for her. She's certainly got the talent and she's got the time. I think this is a good thing for her. But on this entire women's division thing, Tom, what'd you come away with?
Yeah, that interview was so captivating. And you talk about, characters and storylines in wrestling reminding us of personal workplace stories. Of course, I'm not going to stop being a fan of Shayna, but she, in this episode, reminded me of so many people that I've worked with who come in as the new person. They seem to think so much of themselves that they basically appoint themselves unofficially in charge, and they proceed to make every single other person's life miserable. But the bosses like them. They have some kind of credibility. In this case, Shayna has the title, even though she struggled to get it, and they just seem untouchable. And I love that she is being so nonchalant and just so confident in herself, and that she's really just exacting this, reign of terror over the Women's Performance Center locker room. I think it's really creating this pressure cooker situation where when somebody finally cracks and just goes nuts on her, and especially if somebody is able to elicit that look of terror from her that we got in the most recent title match when Ember Moon was kind of turning the tables on her. It's just going to make probably even me go nuts for whoever's doing it, whether it's Nikki Cross, whether it's Dakota Kai. I really am finding this whole development intriguing, and I am so on board.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday Edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about, like, the press conferences and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them, like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say that this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, Shayna, very popular on this show, as our listeners know. Very well thought of on this show. But yeah, I'm going to mark out like nothing else when somebody actually takes it to her. That's going to be a lot of fun. So hopefully it's not too soon. NXT's done a good job with the slow burn. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I will say something about this. It's really nice to see Nikki Cross on the show.
Yes.
She has not been on the show very much. I also thought it was interesting. They started with Nikki, and then they went to Aaliyah, and I was like, wow, Aaliyah moving up in the world. And then I realized, oh, it's going to be every single one of them.
Right.
But see, that's actually what I liked about this. It was every single one of them, and I was waiting for them to do Dakota Kai, and then they didn't.
Right.
They skipped Dakota Kai.
Live, but of course, yeah.
Yeah, they skipped Dakota Kai, and then they went to her, like, but she didn't get the package. Like, it was
right.
Almost like, it was almost to me like they said, you know what, Dakota, you don't even get the package because we know you're not in contention for this.
Yeah, and Dakota, you know, and they really sold that Dakota just doesn't want to even exist in that same world as her right now. Mm-hmm. And, God, it's going to make it so satisfying when she actually does.
I really liked Kyrie's little bit where she says, I know her weakness, but it's my secret.
Yeah, that was fun.
And the Nikki Cross thing, I'm glad you mentioned it because Harley and I were talking about this recently, and he's noticed that she's been at live events. So it's not like she's injured and it's being kept under wraps. It's not like she's, for some reason, fallen out of favor. And one thing that was actually really encouraging to see recently, it was all over Instagram a few days ago, I think, they did a live event in D.C. And Jimmy Seafood in Baltimore, I don't know if they shut down and hosted a private event for the NXT crew or if they just, like, booked a whole huge table for them or whatever it was. But everybody who was at that live event in D.C. was posting about how much they loved Jimmy Seafood. And all of the women were posting pictures of a birthday cake and pictures of themselves with Nikki Cross, because apparently part of the reason they were doing it was because they were celebrating Nikki Cross's birthday. And the fact that that was such a big deal was like, okay, so you guys do still like her. There's hope.
Right. Yeah. I just think it's, I think she was off TV because she was only in a position to lose matches. There was no room for her to be getting a big push opposite Shayna, because Shayna was going to have to go over. So that makes sense to me. It's nice to see her back, and I wonder how long she's going to be there. And I think I'm excited to see her exist outside of Sanity, because that'll really allow her to spread her wings and really see what she's made of. Because she's been a really good, important cog, but she hasn't gotten to step out on her own enough as a character. And now we know that they're not even there. So it's not like she's tethered to them at all, even when she's in her separate matches. I just wonder how long they'll do that, or if she's going to have to stick around until next year's Superstar Shakeup, or what's going to happen. So
yeah, I'm optimistic right now that it'll all work out for her, and I'm just going to stick to it right now that I think that she will be our next NXT Women's Champion.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we don't know who that's going to be, and there are a lot of people it could be, and that is the most exciting thing in the world. Like, I really don't know who's going to be next, and that's not usually the case on any of the rosters. It's often somewhat, I don't know, maybe not easy, but it feels like in the women's division in the past, in WWE, you always knew who was next because only one non-champion was getting pushed at any given time. They've really done such a better job of that in recent years. So there you go. I'm going to go ahead and get to our first email. This is from Michael McGivern. Hello, all. This is a very nitpicky, but one thing I'm wondering, with Kona Reeves debuting the finest gimmick, isn't that kind of infringing on Bianca Belair's the EST gimmick? Indeed, there's room for similar shticks in a promotion. Right now, there are 37 people in WWE that have a dancing gimmick, and I think in 1978, over 1,000 guys were making a living wrestling with a cowboy gimmick. This seems uncharacteristically unlike NXT creative. Surely there has to be a synonym for finest that could have worked without stepping on Belair's original character. Comment on this, Justin?
First of all, this Kona Reeves thing, I think it's just lame. And reading this email, I didn't think about the thing with Belair. But I just have this like fantasy booking of Kona Reeves making his debut, and before he even gets down the ramp, Belair just coming up from behind, just ambushing him, destroying him, and telling him to go home, that he's not the EST she is. That's my fantasy booking, Belair beating up Kona Reeves.
I'm more on board with Kona right now, but I'm glad that you went first, because I was basically going to suggest the same thing. We have listeners attentive enough to notice this kind of thing. It definitely didn't occur to me, but I was also going to suggest an intergender matchup between the two.
Yeah, I mean, this is the guy. I mean, he got this dinky little push ages ago. It went nowhere because he was just not impressive. And then he, I don't know, some time ago, he had another re-push with this crazy eyes thing, or whatever he was attempting to emote, and it just never went anywhere. And now he's doing this Miami Vice thing.
It's odd. They normally don't have somebody... They don't normally don't sign blank canvases to this level. Normally they have some idea how they want to use them. And there are tweaks, but I mean, let's say Velveteen Dream. Going back, he's been Velveteen Dream even since before that was his name. Like he was kind of getting there. They have some idea what they want to do with guys. Kona Reeves is somebody, when they signed him, I just happened to be looking at one of the wrestling sites at the time. I saw his signing. I watched some of his work, and it's okay. Like I watched a couple of matches of his that he wrestled in Hawaii, and they were pretty decent. This is such a weird way to use him based on what I thought I knew about him. I will say, to McGivern's point, I'm not worried about this one because Kona Reeves and Bianca Belair are not going to cross paths. Like, that's not going to happen. They're not going to be... I'm not too worried about it because I don't think it takes much away from what she's doing. I don't think that word is enough for it to matter, especially maybe if he was in the women's division, it would matter because she would have a gripe with somebody else calling themselves the EST, but I'm not worried about that. But this was a good excuse to talk about, I don't know, I'm not super excited about this Kona Reeves gimmick, but who knows, maybe he will throw himself into it just like Dream did and prove to be a real surprise. So yes, thank you, Michael, for that question. I'm going to go on to another email as well before we get to our last match on the show. This is from Josh Dolly. He emails us a lot, and this time, this is what he's got. Hello, gang. How close do you think WWE is on the UK division? If they start up their own weekly show, what wrestlers from NXT are likely to go to the UK show? Next, what do you think is the endgame of the Undisputed Era? Is it maybe an Adam Cole Bay Bay face turn? I love that he typed that. And eventually leaving the group? Do you think Bobby Fish will return from injury and turn on the rest of them feeling like his spot has been taken by Roderick Strong? Or do you think the Undisputed Era goes up to the main roster together down the line? Lastly, what is the ceiling for Heavy Machinery? Though they do look like a team from decades ago, Otis Dozovich's charisma is undeniable, and they are starting to put together some good chemistry. Thanks for all your guys' opinions. It's nice to be able to talk to someone about these things, since none of my friends watch NXT, despite my best efforts to persuade them. Josh from St. Louis. First of all, Josh, these people who will not watch NXT, they are not your friends, and I want you to stop hanging out with them. Okay, so a couple of things here. As far as Fish returning from injury and feeling like his spot has been taken, definitely one of the first things I thought. And when they started handing Roddy the belt the other day, and Fish wasn't holding a belt anymore, that is literally the first thought I had. The only thing that gives me pause there is Fish and O'Reilly are a really good, really polished tag team, and it would be a massive disappointment if those two didn't go up as a tag team together. Now, that's not to say, and these guys, a great tag team wrestler is going to be a great tag team wrestler almost regardless of his partner, but reps together is important, and you hear wrestlers talk about that behind the scenes. Or in shoot interviews, they'll say reps are important as a tag team. You're only going to have great matches if you're doing that. And they've got a lot of reps together. So that is the only thing that gives me pause there. Adam Cole turning Bay face, I don't like, because I just don't see... He's got the most punchable face in the company. Like, he really does. And I mean that with love. It's luck to be born with that face. Like, he won the lottery with that face. And I think that's going to really serve him well as a Miz-type character on the main roster. I know we've talked about that a lot. I wouldn't be shocked if he had a short NXT face run, but I'd be really disappointed if he went up to the main roster as a face. So as far as the UK question, that's a good one. I'm going to throw it to Tom first here and see what he wants to unpack here.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure if I have much to add to the Undisputed Era conversation on top of what you've said and what I said earlier in the show. The heavy machinery thing, I'll let Justin cover that because I think he'll have more interesting things to say about it. The UK division, every time I talk about this topic, I seem to have a little bit of a different take on it. And I was glad to receive this email because just last week, listening to Chris Jericho's podcast with Dunn, Bate, and Seven, and actually also it came up on Court Bauer's interview on Wade Keller's Friday show. And the UK division, pro wrestling in the UK, has only just started to resurge over the past handful of years. So I wonder if things aren't going, if not exactly according to plan, at least really, really well, and they might be a sign of things to come in other regions for WWE's global outreach. And they just did the tryout in Saudi Arabia, and they've been signing Indian stars and Middle Eastern stars and Chinese, I'm calling them stars, but wrestlers, developmental talents. And in the UK, you have a bunch of really good talent, but if you pillaged all that talent to create a WWE UK show, then you would be taking away all of these people who are currently drawing to events out there, and then they would probably be set back to ground zero where they were a few years ago, and pro wrestling in the UK was not looking all that great. So even though the division is small under the WWE umbrella, you've got a title that is being pretty darn well protected with not only excellent matches, but so far only two very good wrestlers have held it. And Dunn has had his clutches around that thing almost in a Brock Lesnar kind of way with the Universal title. And you can send those guys over to Progress and Evolve, and they will draw houses and they will help nurture the pro wrestling scene over there and get you to a point where you can start drawing some of these people or bringing some of these people under the WWE umbrella. And the last that anybody's heard on it, or at least the last that anybody has publicly said about it, there are still plans to do a UK TV show all on its own. but we might have to be patient before we get to that point. So even though right now the UK title and the UK division is sort of a weird, it's a weird thing. We haven't really seen anything like it before. I think that Triple H and the team are just trying something new that, as of right now, I don't think there's a reason to believe that it won't work out.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and we do, I assume most of our listeners know this, but the next UK Championship Tournament, which is a misnomer because it's going to be for the number one contendership, as far as they've said, is going to be on June 18th and 19th. So that is coming back. I think that's a good sign. They wouldn't be promoting another tournament if it was just going to go away. So I think it can exist the way it's existed. If that's the worst case scenario, I don't think that's necessarily really bad. But yeah, that's we're going to get that tournament, and maybe after that, maybe that's when we get that that announcement. But yeah, these guys have a lot of places to work between now and then. Interesting, like in the past, that never would have happened. They would have been complete property at WWE and would not have worked anywhere else. But it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Justin, if you remember all the things that were in this email.
I brought it up on my screen.
Okay.
To help refresh my memory. So WWE UK division, I recently was watching WWE Network, and usually I ignore the ads, especially the ads that are for WWE Network or WWE. But I just happened to notice that this one ad was flashing the names of TV shows, and one of them was UK Championship, along with, you know, 205 Live, Mae Young Classic 2, and a few others. So, yeah, they've mentioned it a couple times now. I think it's going to happen. It's just a question of when. Who from UK would go to from NXT to UK? Probably people, when Hideo Itami went to, you know, the cruiserweight division. You know, somebody like that, somebody who's a good hand, who you just have nothing for on a main roster. That's who you send to the UK. Undisputed Era, Adam Cole, Bay face turn. I think if anything, it would look like the Pete Dunne face turn, where it wasn't that he starts doing anything differently. It's just that WWE finally acknowledges that the fans don't want to boo this guy, and so they stop having him be so much of a heel. Bobby Fish turning on them. I absolutely do not think that's the case. Bobby Fish has felt like such an incredible team player in Undisputed Era. Right? He's the one who gets beat up. He's the one who takes pins. He's the one who jumps in front of, you know, the train so that Adam Cole can keep a championship or whatever. I don't think that him getting in a snit over it was my belt. If anything, it's going to be him saying, I'm tired of being the one who always takes the hit. Which I also think if it was going to happen, it should have happened a while ago. But I don't see him being the weak link here. I don't see any of these guys turning. I think it's going to be, you know, either the whole group turns at once like Sanity did, or they just go up together as heels, something. I don't see one of these people in the group splitting out. Heavy Machinery, I love these guys, right? Like, everybody knows I love these guys. They're so much fun. Dozovic has this charisma. He has this way of walking where I even like the way the guy walks. The only other person on this roster I say that with is Velveteen Dream. I love Heavy Machinery. I think their ceiling is very low. these guys are an undercard act. It doesn't matter how cool I think Tucker and Dozovic are. These guys are an undercard act at best. And it's a shame because I think they're a ton of fun, but, you know, that's can be what the undercard is for. You know, that's they can be the R-Truth. They can be the Santino Morello, and I'm not going to be too upset by that.
And a tag team that is fun but isn't going to win a lot, there's a place for them on the card. I mean, Breezango has had they literally lengthened their WWE careers by getting together because they'd both be gone now probably if they were singles, just kicking around, just not doing anything. I think there's a place for them. And I've not been like this huge vocal supporter of them, but they've started to grow on me, and I've started to kind of be infected by their charisma.
Breezango or Heavy Machinery?
Heavy Machinery is who I'm talking about. Breezango.
Wow.
Fine. Yeah.
Did you just compliment? Then again, I've been saying nice things about Adam Cole too. So, I feel like
well, this is what NXT is for. You know, they have to grow and learn and whatever.
Probably
and
this is more than just NXT growing. This is us growing as people. Because if Mr. Scrooge can give to Tiny Tim,
right?
I can say nice things about Adam Cole, and you can have your heart stolen by Dozer.
This is a real therapeutic breakthrough, listeners, and I'm glad you were all here this week to share this with us. I loved Tucker Knight's cannonball to the outside a couple of weeks ago. That's where it started for me.
Yeah.
And I started saying, I'll open my eyes.
I love how he does these drop kicks because they're horrible drop kicks, but he's trying so hard. And I just like that. You know, it feels so heartfelt where he's saying, I'm going all out. I'm going to launch my 350 pounds of stakes and weights across this ring. And by God, if it looks stupid, I don't care.
Well, we're already on these guys, so let's move on to that match. Kind of odd that a match with a potential team split is relegated to the last thing we talk about on the show. But, a lot of big things seem to happen on this one. So, once again, we got a tease of a split with Sabatelli and Moss, maybe an actual split, this time with Sabatelli walking. I don't know. This feels a little like the Rockers situation where they didn't know which one was going to get the heel push, so they tried both ways to see the response and then decided Shawn Michaels was more put together behind the scenes. You know, they did what they did, and I have to say it worked. So, let's... anything on the split here, anything here other than kicking tires on these guys and seeing what happens? Is Riddick Moss going to be a face? What's going on here, guys?
I like Tino's potential. Even though they almost always appear together, I still don't feel like I've seen enough from Moss to be able to say one way or the other. He definitely seems like the Jannetty, if you will. I at this point, it's hard to see them going any direction that isn't almost a precise mirror of Blake and Murphy, where it seemed like it was working and then it just got shoved to the back burner and didn't even have the blow off.
Right.
So I'm interested, but it's definitely not the reason I'm continuing to tune in, if you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah, I saw Moss in a important position at a live show, and he showed more in that live show than I've seen from Sabatelli ever. And so I still, as a result of that show, think of Sabatelli as the Jannetty because he's not given me anything as much as Moss did in that show. Not to drive a wedge through them further with our tough talk or anything, but I don't know.
Lest we forget, they and his name is escaping me right now. Dan Matha. Is it Matha?
It's Matha. He was introduced on the show forever ago, but he was just
fodder for Joe.
He never even had the match.
Right.
He got beat up by somebody.
Yeah, he's still been... and he got beat up by Joe. It was hilarious.
Right. And if you follow Matt Bloom or NXT on social media, you'll see him popping up in pretty important situations and in tryouts and whatnot. But what I was getting at is that these two that we're talking about and Matha were the three used in the Charlotte, Sasha and Alexa position for Charlotte's WrestleMania entrance.
They
were the
right.
guys yeah. under the helmet. So, you know, that sort of pick doesn't happen randomly.
Right.
There are three guys on NXT with that.
It's not going to be Dozovic out there, but, you know.
That's exactly what it is. They're the only three people in NXT with the body type.
That's part of it, too. But it certainly worked out well for the three women that were chosen for Triple H. So
exactly.
They all did extremely well. And we know that a guy who looks like Tino is a guy who can get a push on the main roster. But I just don't know. I don't know. I don't know if the talent's there yet. I hope there's still a lot of time to work for these guys. I guess it'll be a good thing to see what they do as singles. I just don't know which of them at all seems like a face worker. I really think like they're in.
That's the problem.
Yeah, they're cast well right now. Them up and having them be heels apart from each other is like, what was the point of splitting them in the first place?
Yeah, every time I've seen Riddick Moss as at a live event, he's always struck me as this perfect undercard live event heel. Like,
yeah.
I mean, he may never be main roster, upper card, or whatever. But, you know, we talk a lot about this, you know, every circus needs its clowns. And he is the heel clown. He does a great job at annoying the crowd and, you know, saying the right things against the hero. And, you know, that's there's something to be said for that.
All right, so that's Sabatelli and Moss for you. We've got one more email, and I still don't know how we're going to do this here. So, hey guys, I've got two questions this week. One is serious, and one's a little more fun. This is from Andrew Gamble. Did I say that? If not, he is, you know, he's one of our favorites. He writes us a lot. So, first, with Tessa Blanchard joining Impact, do you think NXT has failed to capitalize on many of the Mae Young women? By my count, 18 of the 32 Mae Young Classic women were signed to contracts compared to the 20 or so cruiserweights signed after the CWC. The most notable names missing from the CWC are Ibushi and Zack Sabre Jr. Meanwhile, there were several women like Toni Storm, Mercedes Martinez, Blanchard, Rachel Evers, Santana Garrett, etc. that did not get signed. Before I move on to the second question, I'll just go ahead and get this started. I would say 18 of 32 is not bad. I am a little surprised that Piper Niven also did not get signed. I feel like that is somebody that they had high hopes for. I mean, they put her into the final four, right? She made and so did Toni Storm. So I would have thought that everyone who went that deep was going to show up in some capacity. Tom Stout, before the show, mentioned to me that he had a rather lengthy dissertation on this, so I'm going to go ahead and throw it to him and see what he's got to say.
Thank you. Yes, this is the part where I throw a bunch of names at everybody and hope that we come out with a conclusion at the other end. But obviously, the Mae Young Classic is one of my favorite recent topics, and with Tessa appearing on Impact, it's one of those situations where compounded my hopes for her near future, as well as I'll basically just say that it's, I want to be happy for her, but it's also just an uncomfortable, like, that's not the spot I wanted you in. I broke down the list of 32 that were in the Mae Young Classic and looked at where they came from and where they are now. And maybe we can come up with an answer for how well the signings turned out coming out of this tournament. And this is, although I think it's important to keep in mind that there were other women in the Performance Center and NXT system there, but this does not take those into account. So there are even more than the ones in these 32. you know, there were people in the Performance Center system like Jesse Elabon, Nixon Newell, Mandy Rose, who for one reason or another were not in the tournament. People who were on NXT TV like Aaliyah, Sonya Deville, Ruby Riott, so on and so forth that were not in the tournament. This is also not taking into account the five unsigned alternates who did not end up appearing in the tournament, including Deonna Purrazzo and Lady Tapa. Lady Tapa did work an enhancement match on the NXT taping that took place the night before the Mae Young Classic tapings. So, assuming that Andrew and I both counted the same wrestlers and neither of us overlooked anything, Andrew's count of 18 signed wrestlers is correct. 12 of these wrestlers were already in the Performance Center or NXT system prior to the tournament. And some of them were even brought in so close to the tournament that you could probably call them signees as a result of the tournament, but I'm not going to split those hairs. So we had three that were already and still are regularly on the NXT roster, those being Bianca Belair, Vanessa Bourne, and Lacey Evans. We had nine that were already in the Performance Center system. Sage Beckett, who has since been released, and she has retired and now fancies herself an herbologist. We had Tainara Conchi, who had a brief Nikki Cross feud. We had Reyna Gonzalez, who appeared in the number one contender Battle Royal. Dakota Kai, who had appeared on NXT before as enhancement talent and also was in the Battle Royal. Abby Laith, a.k.a. Kimberly, who has also since been released. I'm still scratching my head over that one. She did appear in that Battle Royal, and she has since been intermittently working indies and in her free time running marathons at Disney. We also had Gia Lee, who after the tournament suffered a shoulder injury at the PC and is now back to working live events. Sarah Logan, who was in that Battle Royal and, of course, is now on the main roster. Rhea Ripley, who was in that Battle Royal. And Zeta, who has worked one enhancement match on NXT since the tournament. And she was also in that Battle Royal as well. So then that leaves us with 20 wrestlers who entered the tournament without already being under WWE contract. Four of them appeared to be new signings coming off of the tournament. Our two finalists, Shayna Baszler and Kairi Sane, of course, although they had been in communication with WWE since 2016. I know WWE first reached out to Kairi Sane, Kairi Hojo, in October of 2016, and Shayna Baszler had a tryout some point during the year, but I'm not sure when. Then you also had Kavita Devi, who was trained by the great Kali, and she had the most popular Mae Young Classic match according to the YouTube numbers, and it wasn't even close. So we're talking hundreds of thousands more views, so that was a huge blip on the radar. And then you also had Jazzy Gabbert, who was like the Cedric Alexander of the Mae Young Classic in that everybody just went absolutely bonkers for her. One of the most special live wrestling moments that I've ever been a part of was just learning who Jazzy Gabbert is and then immediately being like, oh my God, I think she's my new favorite wrestler. I want her in my face every single day. Of course, that contract was rescinded due to her neck issues. She has since had surgery. She's been rehabbing in the gym. And don't quote me on this, but I think that she has some wrestling dates booked at some German promotions. So things are looking okay for her. And there were also two people that were signed later on. We saw Serena Deeb get signed as a coach. Of course, she was previously on the main roster and she had come through FCW. And we have Candice LeRae, who did also appear in that number one contenders Battle Royal. So that leaves us with 14 competitors in the Mae Young Classic that are still unsigned. I won't talk about the ones that I wasn't super intrigued with, but I believe that nine of them can be considered prospects. So we have, yes, Tessa Blanchard, who's on Impact. She's been having huge success on the indies, and she had been in NXT before as enhancement talent. Rachel Ellering, she's been working some international indies. She also had been on NXT before as enhancement talent. And she was following in her father's footsteps as a power lifter, but I believe that there's some kind of issue where while he was working at NXT on a, I guess you could say, daily basis, there's just something weird where he didn't want her to be a pro wrestler. I don't know all about that, but that may have been what got in the way there. Then Santana Garrett. MLW is building their women's division around Santana Garrett right now. She also was in that Battle Royal. also in the Battle Royal was Mercedes Martinez, a bona fide veteran in women's wrestling. She has been doing a lot of seminars and a lot of Shimmer appearances. And yes, she was in that. Yeah, I mentioned she was in the Battle Royal. She also worked that match against Ember Moon. Was it even a title? It might have even been a title match. I'm not sure. But she had a match against Ember Moon. It took place the same taping as the Battle Royal. Then we already talked about Piper Niven, a.k.a. Viper, who has been working the international indies. Kaylee Ray, working international indies. Nicole Savoy, who has become the Shimmer champion. Toni Storm, international indies. And Mia Yim, who is, of course, Shayna Baszler and Jessamyn Duke's roommate. And she recently recovered from a calf injury, returning in a fatal four-way in WrestleMania weekend against Tessa Blanchard. And I think MJF and I really should remember who the other guy, Jimmy Uta, I think. She is one that I've said NXT would be silly not to sign.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
So, now that I've thrown out all of these names and everything I had to say about them, my interpretation here is that WWE was mostly drawing from what they already had going on. And they didn't have much of an intention of signing too many other people. They were already talking to Baszler and Sane, so that was pretty much already going to happen. They seemed to have known where they wanted to go with this. The only surprises were Gabbert and DeVee. And everyone else, I think that I don't know if there ever really was an opportunity for any of these other nine prospects or anyone else if they had ended up standing out. To get signed, although, I mean, now they've had that exposure. I certainly know of a lot more women's wrestlers than I did before the Mae Young Classic, and I've since been following their careers more or less, depending on which one they are. And I think that it's at least a foot in the door. So I would never, ever call it a failure. In fact, I think it was a huge, huge success. But I think after breaking all that down, I can't really bemoan the fact that some of my favorites, like Martinez and Blanchard and so on, aren't currently signed, because WWE seems to have just wanted to draw from their own pools and primarily stick with what they already had going.
All right. Well, Andrew, if that doesn't answer your question, I don't know what's going to. So, yeah. Thank you, Tom, for that exhaustive research. And
it was
yeah,
fun.
That's good stuff. I actually really liked hearing where some of them were, because I knew a lot of them. I follow some of them on Twitter. I feel similarly about Mia Yim. Where is she? Why is she not on NXT? I actually was convinced she was. I don't know what made me think that. Maybe it was just an assumption that she had to be. And I think it was you who behind the scenes pointed out, yeah, I don't think she is.
Yeah, it's so weird, yeah. And not that this is the be-all, end-all, but I know she's also good friends with Charlotte. So, or at least, they're not besties or anything, but, you know, they're in friendly communication, so that's got to be a boon to her perception whenever she does start returning to the WWE radar.
Yeah, she seems to be extremely well-connected, so it's odd that it hasn't happened, but, you know, there's not a lot of room right now either. The women's division on all three shows is really loaded. I mean, who's going to win matches? I don't know. All right, so question two from Andrew. With Infinity War coming tomorrow, put together your six-man Avengers team using wrestlers from any company or era. To make things a little more interesting, you have to include at least one woman and one tag team. Also, no repeated wrestlers amongst you guys. So, Harley apparently sent in a batch that you guys are going to read for him. I think Tom is. I am not sure. Somebody is.
Yeah, sure.
And I didn't even get a chance to think about this. I was at work all day, and I dropped in right before, so maybe I'll throw some together now. But otherwise, I'm going to have you guys go through it, and maybe, you know, maybe inspiration will strike, and I'll think of who needs to be on my team.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and give you Harley's. I'm sure we're each going to have our own way of thinking about this. Harley professed that he's a lifelong Marvel fan, and he chose to stick to people who have been or still are in NXT, and he called his team not the Avengers, but the Defenders, or perhaps even the New Warriors. And he said that he's got Becky Lynch as the leader, who specializes in hand-to-hand combat. He's got Neville with the power of flight, Ember Moon, the magician, Velveteen Dream with electric blasts, question mark, and Harper and Rowan, the muscle. Is that one, two, three, four? Okay, well, six if you count the two members of the tag team as... the way I did mine, I counted the tag team as a single unit. But I would also be remiss to mention that Harley then later contacted us and said, oh, wait, I changed my mind. I want my team of six to be Oz, Diesel, Kevin Nash, and Kane.
Kane, Isaac Yankum, DDS, and Diesel and in quotation Diesel. Marks. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. Of course. Okay. So... So we talked about doing it draft style at risk of going long. Do we want to just name six and hope there's no crossover?
Yeah, I think that's fine. You know what? While you were talking, I came up with six.
Okay,
perfect. It's not hard to come up with six.
Yeah, I tell you what, I went full superhero. My my group is the Blue Blazer, Mighty Molly, Rosie the Hurricane, and then Fire and Ice, because it sounds very, you know.
American Gladiators?
That's Scott Norton and Ice Train.
Nope, so no crossover there.
Yeah, nobody else is picking Ice Train. Scott Norton, maybe. Ice Train was a guy who I always thought was going to start winning matches at some point, and he never did. But there you go. Blue Blazer, my leader. Owen, my all-time favorite wrestler. There you go.
No blue ahead, pants. Justin. You yep. didn't pick blue pants.
Who's right. that?
You didn't pick blue pants.
I didn't pick blue pants. Oh, she would have worked for sure.
All right, so like any good producer, I picked purely based on box office drawing power. Okay. Which means recognizable faces and names. Number one, Elizabeth.
Okay.
All right, if there is a woman that people know in WWE, it's Elizabeth. Number two, The Rock. Number three, Hulk Hogan. Number four, Steve Austin. Number five, Ric Flair. And number six, Bushwhackers.
Oh, jeez. Well, you're certainly going to have some ego clashes, and then the Bushwhackers can just do their weird thing in the corner.
I was tempted to name the Mega Powers as my tag team, and this way I could and
that's the Hogan. Yeah.
So, either because I was wondering about that because we are thinking fantasy world here, right? Would that give me like double Hogans?
I don't know. Or if we can get two Kevin Nashes and three Kevin Nashes and three I can't think of his last name now.
Glenn Jacobs.
Glenn Jacobs on the same team, I think you're fine.
But the other thing is, if I chose Mega Powers, then I could have dropped Hogan and had another slot for either John Cena or Undertaker.
Right.
Wow, the biggest shock for me here is that we have no crossover. Even if we did this draft style, we still would have gotten all of our top picks. My six, and I was thinking of this in terms of mostly kayfabe winning records and just who's booked the best, my top pick was Andre the Giant. And then I went to Bruno Sammartino. Third pick is Asuka. And then for fourth, I have Mildred Burke. My tag team is the Rockers, mostly because I just wanted to get Shawn Michaels in there. And I was... going for that, like, I didn't want to say, oh, well, the two top singles acts of Edge and Hulk Hogan were technically a tag team for a while, so I can choose them. I wanted to pick a team that was actually a tag team, but they also have one of the best who's ever done it. And then I was really having trouble with my sixth pick. I wanted to go with my all-time favorite wrestler, Triple H. And yes, I know I like Triple H so much, I don't know why I'm allowed on this show.
I like Triple H a lot, too.
Okay.
He is NXT, man. I think you're fine.
All right. But I decided that the legitimate badassery and the affinity with Andre the Giant put Haku just over the top of Triple H. So my six is Andre, Bruno, Asuka, Mildred Burke, The Rockers, and Haku.
Well, you got Andre and Haku in there as a tag team as well. I mean, that was Andre's last televised match. So
exactly. And, every time that Andre gets tied up in the ropes, at least somebody can still fight for him.
I really want to say I really wanted to put Andre on my list too, but I just there just wasn't room.
Had I really actually thought about this and had the time, I probably would have landed on Andre as well.
Yeah, so I mean, so what I did is I put like 12 or 15 male wrestlers on my list because I thought there would be some overlap, and like Andre was on my list right after Rowdy Roddy Piper and Million Dollar Man.
Well, there you go, Andrew. We got to thank you for that question. Next, we got to do, you know, all wrestling versions of A Quiet Place or some such.
What's a quiet place?
Really? The number one movie in America the last few weeks?
You don't understand. I shun society.
Oh.
No, you know what it is I don't watch TV, and if you don't watch TV, you don't see the trailers. You don't see trailers, and if you don't see trailers, then I've seen one movie in the theater in the last, 10 years or 12 years, and that was Mad Max Fury Road, and I only knew about it because it was Mad Max.
I definitely had a streak like that for a while, and the last few years I've gotten back into going to some movies.
No, I don't watch TV. I usually watch 1 to 2 movies a year.
Ouch. Wow. Oof. I try to fit in at least 100.
Yeah, I probably average around 80 to 100 also.
You know, the TV just doesn't pay me my billable hourly rate.
Oh, I understand.
When I watch it, you know, it's like I could be making money or I could be watching TV.
Mine does pay me. I don't know what you're doing wrong.
I bet Triple H doesn't watch too much TV. I bet John Cena doesn't watch much TV.
Yeah, it's possible. And when that'll be relevant when you're making John Cena and Triple H money. So you go ahead and tell me when that happens.
How do you know I'm not?
Because you're doing this podcast. Okay. So,
whoa, that was a shot blow with the belt. Okay,
isn't that great? Like, I'm also on the podcast, so it's not really a shot.
You just became Ciampa. You just kicked me in the groin, big time.
I did. It's we're gonna have a fight forever more than Ciampa and Gargano.
I like how we put that kinesis tape stuff or whatever that is around his eyes, by the way.
That was a lovely touch. I can't believe you didn't mention that.
Because first of all, I think that thing's so heelish anyways. To me, it's just this heelish touch. I'm such a sports person that I need this KT tape. Come on. That stuff doesn't do anything. It's like the titanium copper bracelets that, that Brett Favre puts on his pants to help him send text messages.
Okay.
They sell like these copper bracelet things at Walmart, and Brett Favre endorses them because he can't get Wrangler to have us think about the U-shaped crotch of their jeans in him anymore.
Well, we've gotten to the Brett Favre's crotch portion of the show, which means I believe we are at the end. Next week we have a very good NXT episode. Looks like it's going to have LeRae versus Belair, TM61 versus the Street Profits, who, for some reason, Percy called the most prolific team. I don't know what he meant by that, but
I think they're the best,
most prolific team.
I think they may have one of the best win-loss records in NXT history.
I suppose that's what he's talking about. And then we have Dunn versus Strong, which there's not a reason in the world that can't be the best match we've seen on NXT TV in a while. Well, there's one reason, but it was at TakeOver, and I don't know if that counts. So Yeah, looking forward to this this show next week. Keep sending us in weird questions. And we're going to go ahead and say goodbye and get out. Tom, once more with your Twitter handle and whatever you got.
At Tom Staup on Twitter. And even though I was raked mercilessly over the coals for mentioning this in a certain group of people earlier today, I will suggest the hashtag #WeWantEqualityGRR when we are all watching, enjoying, and live tweeting about the greatest Royal Rumble.
All right. And go ahead, Justin.
I'm Justin_M_James at Twitter, and have a great night, folks.
And I am Kelly Wells, and I am at Spooky Milk on Twitter and Spooky Milk pretty much anywhere else you have social media. And that is our show, and we'll see you next week. Cheers.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip. And you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Life.